Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Our broadcasters are all ages and abilities. This is what makes us your local station. VectisRadio.com.
Hello and welcome back to the show. We didn't realize time was flying past. We're now actually in to the section of the show that's the movie review show. So for those of you who do not know, my name is Tosin. I will be the host for the next hour as we go through the latest releases at the cinema. With me in the studio, if you haven't been listening already, are you. I'm pointing to you.
Hello, it's Sharon.
Yes, and?
And this is Sean.
Yes, we shall be going through films that have been released recently, and we're also going to go. Last week, we started doing our review of the year, where we spoke about our top five films of the year and the films that we thought that more people should have seen. This today, in the second half of the show, after 6:30, we are going to talk about the films that we are bottom five films of the year and the films that we wish less people had seen or fewer people had seen, if we want to be actually accurate about this finite and infinite and all that kind of stuff. So, without further ado, we're going to rush into this because, because we
there's
don't have
an
much
elephant
time.
In the room.
There is a bit of an elephant in the room. So, midnight last night. Sean, where were you?
I have to say I was at Cineworld watching, would you believe?
The Last Jedi?
The Last wow. Jedi. What a coincidence. Last night at midnight, I was at Cineworld watching The Last Jedi. Oh my God. What are the chances of two people watching that film at the same time in the next couple of weeks? So yes, the latest Star Wars movie has been released. Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, or The Last Jedi Episode 8. I'm not sure how they're putting that back and forth. And so yeah, Sean and I both went to see this film. We have to start with this. I wanted to start with The Disaster Artist, but we have to start with Star Wars.
I think we do.
So, Sean.
You want me to start?
Yeah.
No spoilers.
No, I know. Yeah, there's no not going to be no spoilers.
At midnight last night, I was asleep.
Okay, cool. So this is going to be non-spoilerific. This is just going to be talking about the film and
general terms as to whether
we can recommend people go watch the film.
Cool.
So Sean, what do you reckon?
Okay, it was okay, but I was a bit underwhelmed by the whole film. Really.
Yep.
When I went to see The Force Awakens,
yep.
It was really emotional and had some the hairs stood up on the back of your neck when in certain scenes. This didn't quite have that for me. And it was a little bit of a mishmash and it chopped about, was here and there. And I thought my biggest thought was a very, very Disney. You could see the Disney influences with the nice cutesy characters and stuff, which I think they're thinking merchandise and thing. And I mean,
I think if anybody has seen the trailer of this film, you would have seen this thing that looks like a cross between an owl and a penguin called a porg.
Yeah,
yeah, and I can understand that. So they're a bit like the Ewoks almost.
That's right. And then there's some horsey looking things,
like a unicorn-y type thing.
Not quite. It's its own thing, but in the world of Star Wars, it's supposed to be like a unicorn. Like a horse, sorry.
Yeah, it's just really nice, you know, and it makes a nice, sort of Bambi sort of thing. it felt it was geared more towards the, shall we say, the younger audience. For me personally, I mean, I know there was some that was obviously catered to adults as well, but for me, it was aimed at a younger audience, so maybe there would be some new youngsters that would get into the Star Wars thing.
But the funny thing with Star Wars is, because now this is the problem, the problem that the filmmakers have with Star Wars is that you're never going to win. With Star Wars, because it's become such a big thing that everybody feels like they have their right to see their idea of what Star Wars is supposed to be. Because when you say, oh yeah, it's too much like a kid's film, when you think about it, Star Wars was kind of always a kid's film, but it was like a kid's film that we've all grown up with. So now we think that we should demand that as we've grown older and as we've seen more of life and as we've experienced darker themes, Star Wars should have darker themes. And I think that's a very, very tight rope to walk for anybody. I would it's a very tight rope to walk with everybody. And I kind of agree with you. I don't think they quite do it in this film. But this is the first Star Wars movie that I've watched. And I finished it and I've sat down there and gone, I think I might need to see that again.
Yeah,
it's not like a punch in the air. You don't leave it like going, yeah, come on, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which was a bit like Force Awakens. But Force Awakens was, it was, quite frankly, and it's been well documented, it was a bit of, pretty much a retread. It was kind of a remake of A New Hope.
New Hope, yeah.
It was kind of almost like a lot of the beats were the same. The way the film ends, other kind of things that happen, it's almost a remake of A New Hope.
So I know a lot of people are expecting Last Jedi to be Empire Strikes Back.
And to their credit, that's not what it is.
Oh,
there's elements.
There's elements.
Well, the thing is, like, there's elements of this, but there's also elements of Return of the Jedi.
There's
almost elements of Return of the Jedi, and there are for me, because I remember saying, okay, cool, I was happy with The Force Awakens. I knew it was pretty much a remake of A New Hope, but I was fine with that because it showed that these people understood that they were releasing this film into a world in which the prequel trilogy existed, and people were not that enamored with the prequel trilogy, so they understood what and I was like, okay, cool, now do something different. And in this film, they give this, when you say mishmash, I think that's a good word, because it's kind of this thing of trying to give you something different and trying to move the story along into a different area, but at the same time trying to remind you, yeah, we know it's Star Wars, so we're going to put some things in there that are just Star Wars. Although I don't think I heard anybody say the words, I've got a bad feeling about this.
No, I don't think. I don't remember that.
I go back home and I was like, what? Hang on, I don't think anybody said the words, I got a bad feeling about this. Or if they did, maybe it was one of the droids or something like that. But if they did, I did not notice that.
Sorry, Toes, yeah. Another thing just is, you know, like me with movies, if there's something that's not quite, and I just sort of look at something and think...
Yeah, in the background.
No, not necessarily in the background of what's going on at the time, and I'm like,
Does that make sense?
You know when we were talking about War of Planet of the Apes?
Yes,
and
yes,
there's certain
yeah.
bits in that that just...
There's certain bits in that thought, that you think, hang on a second, why would that happen?
What's this going on? That wouldn't happen. Even in a fantasy, and I know it's supposed to be a fantasy movie, and I know like War of the Planet, but things like that, they've still got to be...
There needs to be an internal logic that
they keep needs to be, you know, because it just doesn't seem to... So, and there's quite a few moments...
I agree with you on that. There was a bit in it that made me go... Force ghost do what now? I was like, seriously? A force ghost can do that? If a force ghost can do, then what's the point of, hang on a second.
Yeah, and that's it. And there's some other things in it that I'm like, well, no, I don't, I think
within your world, within what you've told us, that is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
There's a whole section where they go to pretty much the Star Wars version of Las Vegas. And
okay, yeah, not Mos Eisley then, but something like that?
Something like that. It's kind of like, you know, a shiny Mos Eisley.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like if Mos Eisley is Blackpool or Margate, then this is Las Vegas.
Okay.
If you get what I mean. And they go there. And that whole section of the film, quite frankly, could be done without. You could cut it out of the film. It's not needed. It takes away from... And there's a lot of parts of this story there are... Essentially, all the characters are in one location. So for a large part of the running time, these people are there on that spaceship. These people are there on that planet. These people are there. And it's...
I'd so love to say... I'm not going to, but I'd so love to say... Like, you've just made me think of, like, about 20 things in that one short time. That's just like, what? No, why didn't they do this? What?
Yeah,
why didn't they say this? What? Surely that?
Yeah. And there's things in this film I really liked. There's some of the shots which I think are absolutely amazing. There's a shot of one man standing up against a whole bunch of AT-AT walkers, which I think is a brilliant shot. I think some of the performances, I think Mark Hamill, he really does, you believe this is the same Luke Skywalker that you see from all those years ago. I mean, obviously, but it's like, as I was saying about, you know, growing up with Star Wars and growing up with it, it becomes a kid's film that you've grown up with and you expect it to grow up with you. He starts off as this sort of, like, you know, wide-eyed farm boy who's looking to the stars, but now he's jaded, he's disillusioned, and I think he does really, really well with that. I think a problem I think that they had is when they made The Force Awakens, they kind of reset everything, and they kind of went, right, okay, cool, we know that at the end of the last the Return of the Jedi, we had this, yay, the rebellion has won, but they kind of reset everything and went, okay, and now here's, they're not the Empire, but they're the First Order, and here, oh, there's a new resistance, a new rebellion, and they kind of reset it and put the world back where it was before. So you're kind of like, it feels like you're going through the same furrow, and I can imagine the trouble that they would have had going, hang on, how do we not just make what we've made before, because we've reset the world where there's this big bad and then there's these good guys who are like the little people and going through, and how do we not just, and so they try and go away from that, and but I do feel like there's just bits of it, there's bits of it that I think that work really well, bits of it I think you could have found a better way of doing that, and bits of it which there's some awesome, brilliant, beautiful shots in it, and but there are just some things to do with the story where it's kind of, it doesn't quite gel together. There's bits where it doesn't quite gel together.
And certain things that happen that I just think, come on.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to perhaps in the new year, when lots of people have seen it, is I can pick it a bit more and say a few more of the bits that
go into the detail.
Yeah, into the detail a little bit more. Yeah,
yeah. Because I think, as I said, I felt it was interesting. That's the thing. It's not punch the air. It's interesting. Some of the things that they're doing with the film are like, that's interesting, but it isn't. It isn't a punch the air Star Wars movie, and for the fact that it feels different from every other Star Wars movie that's ever been made, I commend them. But I don't really think everything works.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to say 3 out of 5.
And I would agree on 3 out of 5.
Yeah. I'm going to say 3 out of 5. So my top 5 films of the year list is unbothered.
Me too.
It's my top five. It's unbothered because
perhaps he was expecting great things. I mean, because the trailer was a brilliant trailer.
I avoided a lot of the trailers.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw one and I thought, okay, look, there's some interesting things happen here. I find that because, yeah, and I wasn't really expecting that much from it. I was just like, be what you will be. Whatever this film's supposed to be, because trying to hold like this thing, oh, you must be like this for any film, is nobody's going to be able to live up to that. And there were bits of it. I liked what they did with the Rey Kylo Ren relationship. Yep. I liked how they did and how they moved things forward. I liked where they went in a bit more into the back. So this is a film where there's a lot more talking. There's a lot more figuring out what's going on in the background, or what is the motivation for this character and all that kind of stuff. And although because of what they've done, you spend a large part of the running time, all the characters are not together. So the characters who you were introduced to in the first film for a large part of the running time are just not together. They're all over the place. And then it's like when they try, and they kept being bits in the film where I was like, hang on, where did they go? Hang on. Oh, then someone comes and you're like, hang on, where did they come from?
And they don't tell people things like this. There's one particular, there's one bit where you say, hang on, they're in this place, and yet you're just going to go and destroy them, and that's where they are. You're on the same side.
There's some of them where I'm thinking, how do you do that? But for me, I understood, like, if someone was going to go destroy that thing and some of the allies are there, the person who was going to did not know. And that's because people weren't really talking to each other, so they did not know. But it was kind of like, wait, how did you survive that?
Yeah.
There's a couple of bits of, how did you survive that? How did that go? What? And you know, you're like, I know it's a fantasy, but you've created a logic.
Yeah.
You've created a world, and you've got to either you've got to play by the rules, but it feels a little bit like you're inventing new rules.
That's right.
Like you're inventing new rules that don't necessarily
that
go
defy the laws of physics
with the original rules that you had, or the physics
in
the world.
Change the laws of physics.
Well, the thing is, like, it's like they change the physics that you've told us. You've told us this is the way things work in this world, and now you're doing something that changes that.
I think in going back now, Return of the Jedi, there's the bit where Hans, they're down on the planet, aren't they, trying to get things. He says, you've got to give them time.
Yeah,
you know, but it's not even. If you probably, I know that that might sound confusing, but I'll explain it to you all sometime.
Yeah, so it's moved things along, but it doesn't leave you punching the air.
It
doesn't leave you punching the air. It's interesting to watch. They do some good things. I think Laura Dern was really, really good as a new character. I think Carrie Fisher did well, even though they reduced Leia to just pretty much. Almost everything she says sounds like one of these inspirational wall posters.
Yeah.
It's like, no spark, there is no hope.
How about the
hang
other,
in there.
How about the other characters? Did you think, you know, like Poe Dameron and who's the other guy?
Poe Dameron, Finn.
Finn. He was like a clowny sort of character, a bit like Jar Jar Binks.
No, goodness, I felt like they haven't decided what Finn's character is.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I feel like they haven't decided what Finn's character is. Poe Dameron gets a lot more to do than he did in The Force Awakens, but it still isn't much to do because I feel like they have so many different strands all over the place. They're trying to bring it together. There's the whole Vegas thing that I mentioned about. It sounds as if that was coming with just to give one of the characters something to do of importance, which doesn't really have. And it's so it has its issues, and yeah, I think a lot of them are of their own making because of the way they sort of brought it back and the way they sort of rebooted the whole world, and they decided we're going to have a big bad empire again. Although we're not going to call it the empire, we're going to call it the First Order, and we're going to have the rebellion. And I've just feel. I'm thinking if you compare it to some of the novels that were written after Return of the Jedi, I kind of felt like I would have preferred it if they had adapted some of those novels, because those moved things along. Those moved things and looked at like, you know, oh, where Luke, Leia and Han are afterwards and how what happens and when the kids show up and all that. And they moved it along, but it feels like this is just going back into exactly the same world, which...
Yeah.
Now I think about it, I think might have been a bad idea.
Without telling me the answer, do you find out more about Rey's background or where she's from?
Yes.
You do.
And that is one bit that I really liked. I was like clapping my hand for that. Because
don't give anything away.
Okay, I haven't said anything, I mean, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean with that. I like the way, and I think the Rey-Luke Skywalker relationship is, for me, one of the highlights of the film. I like the way that I like the way that works.
Stay good.
Yeah. All right, cool. Now, we're going to go quickly and talk about the Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
So, Sean, you saw this film last week.
I did.
Yeah, you saw this film last week. And this is a film that is directed by James Franco and also starring James Franco as a character called Tommy Wiseau, based on a true story about this guy, Tommy Wiseau, who made what is largely regarded as one of the worst films ever made, but it is so bad, and it's almost kind of like genius levels of badness in this film that has gone into so bad it's good, and has developed a massive cult following, and it's been playing pretty much constantly for 15 years. People have been going to watch this thing. They dress up as the characters. There's certain things you're supposed to do when things happen on screen and all that kind of stuff. It becomes this big, massive audience participation event. Because I went to watch this last Friday at a cinema in Southampton, and it was a total audience participation event. People were like yelling the lines out of the screen. There's something to do with plastic spoons. When something happens on the screen, you just throw plastic spoons at the screen. I'm talking like a volley. I couldn't believe how many plastic spoons these people had brought to the cinema with them. It just kept coming up. I was like, how do you have so many plastic spoons? And they kept throwing them. And it has to do with this film, because this film is... And so they've made a film based on a book called The Disaster Artist about the making of the... possibly the worst film ever made.
The best worst film ever made.
So, Sean, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. Okay. I enjoyed this. And when you find out more about the background, it's even more enjoyable. And when they compare the pieces, the after credits, I think it's isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, so they've sort of nailed it, really. The Disaster Artist has nailed the movies.
Yeah, it has.
And it's just, I mean, great performances all round, I think.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and some good cameos as well. So, you know, Vanessa,
what?
Oh, no, I'm thinking of something else. Yeah, I'm thinking of something else. Sorry, my mind crossed over. Yeah, but no, I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah. I think it's good, and there's something weird about watching all these really, really talented people coming together to celebrate something that was so incompetently made. Because if you can go and watch The Room, which is, I mean, I went to watch it last Friday, as I said, and after I watched The Room, because I wanted to watch it before I watched The Disaster Artist, after I watched The Room, I was like, what did I just watch? What the heck was that? And there's bits of it that are they're just so badly made. Like, characters show up that are never introduced, but end up becoming, like, central to the story or whatever story that there is. They disappear and they're never spoken about again. And then other characters just show up and you're like, what's going on here? It's like, and if you go online, people have gone through this for and they've spotted all these things that they're like, oh my God, I never noticed that before. That, and the film starts off with a whole bunch of celebrity fans of the film, The Disaster Artist, that is, starts up with a whole bunch of celebrity fans of The Room talking about the film. And there's Kristen Bell, who apparently she's such a big fan of it, her Veronica Mars fame and everything, that she regularly hosts viewing evenings for The Room. And she says, if you got the best five filmmakers in the world today and told them to come up with something, like, you know, they wouldn't even come close to the and I agree with her, because it's kind of like, in the film itself, you find a little bit about this character, Tommy Wiseau, who is, quite frankly, eccentric.
Big time.
Let's put it that way. He's eccentric. Nobody knows where he's from. He has this sort of like weird, sort of like garbled English accent, and it's kind of like people think he sounds like he's Eastern European, but he tells everybody he's from New Orleans. No, he apparently, because the reason this film got made is because he was trying to make it as an actor, and his friend was like, oh, maybe we should just make our own movie. And he was like, yes, we should. So he writes this script, he goes to this place, and apparently this film costs a lot of money, because when you're supposed to hire all the equipment, instead of hiring the equipment to make the film, he buys everything. He buys all the equipment, and then he hires this crew to make the film for him, and it's just kind of like disaster as they're trying to make it, and everybody's like, what the heck is this guy doing? And it's...
Yeah, they build a set, and he says, why don't we just film... Why don't we just film out on the street?
They build a set of an alleyway, and there's an alleyway right outside. And one guy's like, why can't we just film in the alleyway? He's like, no, this is like real Hollywood. So they build this set. And when you read the original story, the set that they built cost about $60,000. And this guy paid for it all himself. And people are like, where the heck did his money come from? Nobody knows. So I think the thing about it is that I watched The Room, watch The Disaster Artist, and I want to read the book, Disaster Artist, to find out more about it. And you just want to find out more and more about this character, who is just this weird, eccentric one-off. And I think that's what it's like. The film and the incompetence with which the film is made, I don't think it could have been done by anybody else.
No.
I really don't think it could have been done by anybody else, because he is... It just kind of like came off from this sort of almost chaotic headspace that the guy lives in, where he oh my God, there's a bit in the film, in The Room, where you have a girl. I mean, the storyline of the film is, quite frankly, it was besides the point. Just go watch it for the craziness of it. And there's a bit where someone is talking, and they're saying, yeah, and I've been there. Oh, and by the way, I've got the results of the test back. I definitely have breast cancer. And then they just carry on talking about everything. And it's like, nobody reacts to this. Nobody goes, oh my God, oh, that's so bad. And it never comes back again.
What's the bit as well where he laughs? And he, oh. That's that bit, isn't there, where he laughs like, oh yeah, I think so-and-so got beaten up.
It's like, yeah, this girl, she got beaten up and she's ended up in a hospital on Guerrero Street. And he goes,
yeah.
But I think, okay, because we're kind of talking about two films here, but The Disaster Artist, I think James Franco's performance as Tommy Wise is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because he even nails that, because Tommy Wise has this weird sort of laugh, which is kind of like a... the way he does it, he nails it. Tomasa has a very, very, there's one particular scene in the film where he has a very weird body language where it looks like he's doesn't quite have control of all his limbs. James Franco nails that and everything like that, and it's a very, very good performance. And I think Dave Franco, his younger brother, who plays the guy who wrote the book, who was like Tommy Wiseau's best friend, he does brilliantly as well. So that's a film I would probably give I think four.
I'd give it a four. Yeah, I'd give it a solid four.
Yeah, I'll give it 4 out of 5. But I would say if you can watch The Room before watching the film, I think it adds a lot. I think it adds a lot to the film because there's little bits in the film where they make homages to The Room that, like, within the... It gets very, very meta. They make homages to The Room within the Disaster Artist, and you're like, I see what they're doing there. Although, you might not want to watch it on your own because you will just go, what the heck is going on? I think you need to watch The Room with a friend because you can look at each other and go, that was crazy, right? And you go, yes, that was crazy. You need to watch it. So yeah, Disaster Artist 4 out of 5. All right. Okay, we're going to take a break now, and after the adverts, we'll be back with our second half of a review of the year.
Stay social and get in touch. It's /Vectis Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Welcome back to Vectis Radio. This is the movie review show on Vectis Radio 104.6 and online. We have just had Brian Curtis walk into the studio, who shall be with you for the eclectic mix from 7 p.m. But between now and then, we are going to conclude this show by continuing our second half of our review of the year. Last week, we spoke about our favorite films of the year. So each one of us talked about our top 5 films of the year, films which we wish more people had watched. And now we're going to do the second half of that, the evil twin, if you will, of our worst 5 films of the year, and films that we wish less people had gone to watch. So let's kick off with you, Sharon. And Sharon, can you tell us what were your worst 5 films of your worst films of the year?
The worst films of the year, I think, Alien Covenant.
Okay.
I thought it was dreadful.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you thought that was so dreadful?
I think they made such stupid errors.
Yep.
The characters. And I'm thinking, these people are supposed to be in space, so presumably they had some sort of test or some sort of training to go into space. They're like future pioneers. And they did ridiculous things. Like, one of them got infected, so there's no quarantine. And then as soon as... Then the medical officer, like, panicked, so it blew any idea of quarantine. And then some of the things, like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, why are you doing that? Well, you know...
It made no sense to me.
Oh, we can breathe. We can breathe on this planet. Yeah, let's just go out and have a look. We don't worry about the flowers and fauna. If there's anything poisonous.
Yeah, don't worry about what we can breathe in that can infect us. Because
ridiculous.
It's like, hey, we're going to treat this as our next new home.
You can know... That says it all. That's one of mine.
I just thought it was ghastly. And then the whole Michael awful. Fassbender, you know... Yeah. Fondling himself in a manner of speaking, that sounds awful. But he's like,
you blow, and
because there's they're two.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think because he's an android, and there's two versions of the same android.
Yeah,
and Michael Fassbender
plays both of them, and then there's one bits where they're interacting in a way that's just downright creepy.
Yes, really, really creepy, isn't it?
And you're just going like, oh no, that's just not nice.
Awful film.
And I just thought, to me, it was just went on and on. And I'm just thinking, will this film never end? I just got fed up after about a quarter of an hour, I think. Mm. When they did these really stupid things, and there's a guy, they kept making a big deal about how he's like the Christian, or he's like this man of faith. And then it didn't affect his behaviour whatsoever. It's like, you throw that in there, and then it didn't do anything with it.
Yeah.
It was just like a, hey, by the way, he's the Christian guy. And it's like, is he? So he still does just as stupid things as everybody else. And it was like meaningless. It was meaningless to the plot. It was just like one of these things they threw in there.
Yeah.
But it didn't develop with it. They didn't do anything.
Didn't run with it.
I'm glad Sharon feels.
It was just a pointless piece of information.
I'm glad you feel like that, Sharon, because you've just said everything I feel as well. And you know, I mean, that's my big thing is if something stupid happens in a film, then, and there was so much stupidity.
Oh, and that one, it was just,
absolute stupidity.
Stupid on stupid.
Okay, you know, this is the funny thing I feel like. I feel like, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like usually when I watch a film I really, really don't like, I think I almost prefer talking about the films I don't like.
Yeah.
The films that I do, because you can just go in. You don't have to think about it. Like, it was stupid. It was rubbish. And I feel like this is what this is going to be a bit like. Okay, so Alien Covenant. Thanks. I'm happy I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Maybe when they have old school sci-fi franchises, they should just leave them well alone.
just don't go there.
Although they did well with Blade Runner. But stop now. Stop.
So I would go with The Mummy, which I think was just a love-in for Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Oh, you just reminded me that's going on my list.
I just thought it was tedious. There was no tension. There was no real sense of peril. The protagonists were just sad bland. And misguided.
I agree with you on that one.
That it was just a misfire on every level. Even the people I normally love, like, you know, Russell Crowe, I normally think he's worth the sort of the ticket money, even if I didn't have an unlimited card. I just thought he was just underwhelming as Jekyll and Hyde.
I think he would have been good if the film before he shown up had given you anything. Because obviously you had the original Mummy. I'm not talking about the original
Mummy.
I'm talking about the Brendan Fraser ones, because obviously these were done back with Boris Karloff and everything like that. But it's the Brendan Fraser ones, they at least gave you like sort of like sub Indiana Jones.
I really enjoyed the first Mummy, excellent.
The first two, the Mummy and the Mummy Returns.
Yes.
I thought the Mummy Returns was hilarious, apart from the horrible CGI rock at the end of the film. That was terrible.
The Scorpion King. He was just like a plasticine version of the rock.
Everyone looking at it going, really? I was like, what the heck's going on here?
Is this the best you could do?
Apart from that, that film I actually really enjoyed, and it seems to know what it is.
Yeah.
But the problem with this one is that it's Tom Cruise.
That's all it is.
The second you had Tom Cruise in it just became like a Tom Cruise film. It's like, oh, I want to climb that. I want to do that. Oh, by the way, I'm really, really like, you know, I'm like the dashing guy and all the women want me. So this film is mainly going to be about like, you know, this woman chasing me because she could have anybody else in the world, but no, she wants me.
Yeah. And she was just like the bird in it. I thought, I don't mind where women have been a romantic interest, but when you're just the bird, I just get a bit fed up with that.
Well, But the lady who played the mummy, I thought she did really, really well. I liked her as a mummy. I was like, yes, this is great, this is brilliant. But I just felt like the whole thing about there was even the bit where Tom Cruise has his shirt off and like she's like pouring over his and it just seems like, I agree with you, it feels like it was just such a hackneyed attempt to get a franchise going, especially because before the film was even released, they already gone, ooh, we're going to make a whole new shared universe, the way like Marvel have a shared universe. Before the film even starts, they have a new logo for the shared universe called like Dark Universe. And I'm like, make one good film before you start. Make one good, and they didn't.
Before you build the empire, make sure your darn country's in order. And it was just... Yeah,
and I feel it was almost kind of like, you know, they just didn't have a director who could tell Tom Cruise, no, this is a bad idea. This is ruining the film. And I would rather watch the Brendan Fraser Mummy. And I remember saying at the time that I think this film would, because there was all these sort of supposed to be witty repartee things that happened between Tom Cruise and his
best friend
played by Jake Johnson, which Tom Cruise just wasn't nailing. I was like, this would be better with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
This film would be better with Will Ferrell in the Tom Cruise role. But yeah, sorry, carry on. Yeah, so the mummy.
The mummy. Yeah. I thought particularly bad was the snowman. Okay. Again, I don't normally dislike Michael Fassbender, but he's
having a good year.
He hit another sort of dud, this one. But I just thought it was badly made.
Yep.
I thought the story should have been good, and it just wasn't.
Yep.
I think it was just... Yeah, it just did not deliver as a thriller. It didn't deliver as a Nordic noir. It didn't deliver on anywhere you want a crime thriller to work. To me, it didn't. It like set up all these characters, and the way they were like setting them up, as if it's like, you know, oh, he's the killer. You think, no, he's not. I know he's not.
Oh my God!
You're just setting this up so we think it's him, and then it's obviously not going to be him.
Oh, this sounds like one of my worst films of the year.
It was just to me. It was.
I didn't see it.
Predictably,
I didn't see The Snowman.
It should be good.
But there's the film that I know that we both saw that pulls a very similar stupid, like story thing that just ruins whatever promise the film had.
Yeah,
I'm talking about The Limehouse Golem.
The Limehouse Golem. On yours. I didn't see that one.
All right, cool.
But yes, so it was set up so that you would start going, oh, I wonder who did it. And it's like, we know it's going to be them.
Okay.
The trailer, I'll just say the one thing, the trailer put me off seeing it this bit, but you said it wasn't even in the movie, was it, where he goes...
He's on his knees screaming. And outside a burning building. That is not in the finished film.
The trailer put me off. It was in front of every single film for months. Yeah. I hated it.
And then when you see the film, you're thinking... Where are all those scenes that were in the trailer? There's things like, you know, he's been taunted by the killer. He's these phone calls or these messages. Yeah, yeah.
Did they not give you all the clues, Sharon?
That wasn't in there. They must have made two versions of that film.
All right, cool.
So the snowman. Yeah. Was a poor, and I think that was one of my other one on my list. I can't even remember the full name of it, but it was again the reboot of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The final, the fifth chapter. How many ones have there been?
I don't know. I lost interest.
I just thought it was, and something and nothing. I think it's supposed to be like the, well, hey, we're going to restart anew. We've got the, apart from like the dragging this safe through a town in the Caribbean. Again, it's just, I think. It was a Johnny Depp vanity project, really.
All right. And there's a film that I know you had on your list that you haven't said yet, and I'm going to hand this over to Sean because I know it's also on your list. Geostorm,
indeed.
Oh, that is on my list.
That is, yeah. There's some others, yeah. So, but Geostorm is definitely...
So what was so bad with Geostorm?
It's just awful. Everything, really. It was just it tried to be 10 different movies, you know, with all the old stuff, with like Armageddon.
And
2012,
and just the total thing, just totally, totally pathetic, ridiculous, and really horrible acting.
Yeah, well, you had these scenes where, you know, thousands of people are killed in these disasters, and but you don't care less.
The dog.
They save the dog, or this one woman managed to outrace this sort of ice storm, and it's like, and you couldn't care less.
I could tell you even before I watched that film, they were going to save the dog. What else you got?
For me, right, okay, mine were mostly films which I thought were really boring. So, Death on the Nile goes down as one.
Yeah,
of
you mean Murder on the Orient Express?
Murder on the Orient Express. Yeah, that's the one.
They haven't made
that's
that one. Yet.
No, well, hopefully. Well, I won't bother with it if it's anything like this. And my reason for that is it was just a boring, it was a boring, boring movie, and I did fall asleep in it because someone had to nudge me, so because I was snoring rather loud. That's how bad it was. Murder on the Orient Express.
Murder on the Orient Express.
Another one I found incredibly dull and boring was The Lost City of Z or Z.
Yep.
The Lost City of Z. Purely, totally, totally boring. Okay. The Ritual started off really, really good, looked like it was going to go somewhere, and then just fell.
Yep.
Just totally, totally collapsed into stupidness. Stupidness, stupidness.
All these people have been hit by the stupid stick tonight, haven't they, a lot of these filmmakers?
And one which I think is going to cause a bit of controversy with Tozin is I really, really didn't like it.
It.
I really, really did not like it. I thought it was too... I just didn't like it. It just didn't work for me, and I really did not like it.
Okay. I did not like it. I quite liked it. I like things that they did with it. I can understand why some people wouldn't, but I quite liked it.
It's all subjective.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's why we can sit here and we can argue about stuff and we can go throw stuff at people's hard work, because the sad thing about filmmaking is that even though Geostorm might be a piece of rubbish, people still worked hard on that film.
Yeah, they did.
And I think that's one thing, like, you know, the disaster artist. That's one of the things that it comes across, that even though it's a piece of rubbish, even though the final film might be rubbish, that is somebody's dream. That is somebody's highlight for them, getting to make that film. And they even had, like, there was a bit in the disaster artist where they talked to one of the, they ask you, why do you drive 15 miles every day to come in here? Why? And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, I just love being parts of films, and even the worst day on a film set is better than the best day anywhere else, and all that. and so it is subjective, and it's sad to think that people could work and put a lot of money into something and it could turn out being something like Geostorm.
Yeah.
Or like Transformers The Last Night.
Oh. Yeah, Transformers The Last Night.
Transformers The Last Night, which is my number one piece of rubbish of the year.
I missed that one, thank goodness.
It was pretty bad.
It was terrible. The thing about it is, like, okay, I've got to go back. We're talking about bad movies, right? And good thing that we're talking about The Room also this week, or The Disaster Artist this week. So that's a film that is terrible. that is terrible, but when you hear the story about it, it becomes terrible in almost kind of like a cutesy way, almost in a folklore way. It was charming about these people who were just tries and they just wanted to make a film, and so this guy put all his money into it and all that kind of stuff, and this whole like, and like, you know, it's just about his incompetence, because he'd never, because The Room films like a film that somebody had heard about films and decided, oh, I'm going to go make one, but I'd probably never even watched one before. That's what it feels like when you're watching this film. But then you get Transformers the Last Night, which has the same level of filmmaking incompetence, I feel, when it comes to storyline, when it comes to whether one scene links to another scene, whether it comes to, oh, this guy's going to come do this thing, and what they're going to do, when it comes to what happens in one scene and whether it links to the scene that immediately follows it. No, there is like no connection. But when you think, but hang on a second, this is Michael Bay. This is the guy who made The Rock. This is the guy who made Armageddon. This is, how is this so badly made?
It's awful.
It makes me think, and this is what we heard in the news today, that Disney have bought Fox.
Yeah.
And it makes me, and this is part of my whole thing, especially in films, I feel it's bad when somebody becomes too powerful and gets to have everything that they want. So I think Michael Bay's earlier films, Bad Boys, Armageddon, The Rock, I feel like people didn't really know who he was. He was a music video director. People were, and so he probably had a lot of checks and balances on him, and, oh, you can't really do that, you can't really do that, you can't really. So they had to like figure out ways around it. But I think because he's made these Transformers movies and they're so expensive and they've made so much money, I feel like nobody tells him what to do anymore. And from what I hear, stories of him being on set, he just yells at people and fires people left, front, and center, so he can do whatever the heck he wants. And whatever the heck he wants is not good. He needs a check and a balance, because Transformers The Last Night was a piece of rubbish. That is my number one piece of rubbish for this year. Following that, okay, I've already mentioned The Limehouse Golem. Not going to say any much more, no. But I feel it had a very, very interesting premise. It started off kind of well, and then it frittered it all away.
The thing is with these movies, I could put them on my list as well. You know? I mean, it's difficult. Five, because there were a few others. I mean, honourable mention, War for Planet of the Apes. You remember, right?
Yeah. You know, we had a bit of an argument about that. Okay, The Mummy. Thank you for reminding me about The Mummy. I did think that was.
I think we all agreed.
On The Mummy. But it also highlighted to me that in this year, I feel like I have almost like a sense of when a film's going to be rubbish or I'm not going to like it, and I kind of avoid it.
Mm.
So I avoided a lot of these films. So the films that you guys mentioned, I didn't watch a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because of that, I was thinking, oh, I've got five. But of the films that I've seen this year, I would have to put Justice League on that.
Really?
I would have to put Justice League.
Okay.
Of the films that I've seen, I don't think it's terrible. It's probably it's probably the best film on my list this year. It was just, for me, I summed it up as saying it was a shame. Yeah. I finished watching Justice League and just thought, oh man, that was a shame. Oh my, they just messed it up.
You want it to be good, and then it's just not what you want it
for
to
DC,
be.
For DC, I'm just like, burn it all, keep the same actors and start again. And films that I feel that should have done worse, which I think were really, really big hits, everybody went to watch them, and I was like, why are you spending your money, why are you making this, don't you realize that if you go and watch this film, they're only going to make more,
they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Number one, Transformers. I was like, I'm sorry, but I just do not understand why people kept watching that film. I mean, maybe the kids who don't care about storyline, I just want to see, oh, robot, okay, maybe that I can understand, but then again the film has like a whole bunch of swear words in it, and it just doesn't know who it's for. No. But yeah, it's making loads of money. And films that I think should have done worse, I'm going to possibly controversially put La La Land on this list.
Yes, I didn't think it was as fabulous as it thought it was.
I thought, no, it wasn't. It had moments, and there were some good moments.
Yeah, some good scenes and some good musical numbers.
The start was good, and a couple of scenes were really, really good. But on the whole, it wasn't like as great as everybody.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was not as great as everybody made out. And the thing is, I'm a massive fan of musicals. There are bits of it where it made me think of Singing in the Rain, and it felt like there are bits of Singing in the Rain. I was like, oh, that's quite good. And I think I would have really liked La La Land. I mean, because this is not saying it's a bad film. This is saying a film that I feel that it should have done worse.
Yeah,
that I feel like less people should have seen. There should have been less hype about the film.
Yeah,
it's not because I think if there had been no hype, I would have watched the film and I think it would have been fine. But the it reminds me of Titanic. I remember seeing Titanic on opening night and thinking, oh my word, this is old school filmmaking. They don't make films like this anymore. This is great. And loving it and telling everybody to go see it. But then the hysteria started and everybody started saying how great it was. And all the girls in the world started crying because Jack was dying. And I remember buying the soundtrack for this song and for this film and playing it in a room and leaving the room, coming back into the room. And all this was when I was at A-levels, and all the girls in the room were all in a corner by themselves crying. One was curled under the table, one was in the corner of the sofa, and they're all crying, just listening to the soundtrack because it reminded them of Jack dying. And I remember thinking, I don't think I like this film anymore, even though I really, really like the film. And I think similar thing with La La Land. Yeah, I think it was just overhyped.
I think some, like music, I think sometimes they are overrated. I think there's some films that are really, really overrated, and I'm going to be really controversial here.
Yep.
It's a good film, and it's okay, but I think... That Wonderful Life is, you know, It's a Wonderful Life is...
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's very overrated.
Okay.
I think it's an overrated movie. I don't think it's actually... Maybe because of how it takes place, but for me, it's not that...
Work of genius.
Not work of genius, yeah.
It made me cry. It gets my vote.
Makes me cry.
All right, how about you guys? Films that you feel they should have done worse this year?
Should have done worse. Have you got any, Sharon?
I'm just trying to think, because you know how you sort of tend to forget the ones that underperform. You just go, oh, well, that was another hour wasted.
Yeah.
Or two.
Yeah, I have to say, there was a few this year, wasn't there, really? But I guess smaller movies or overhyped movies, I'm trying to think.
Well, I thought some of them they could have done better, because I was thinking, I enjoyed Stratton, which was the British SBS service film.
Yep. I remember that.
With Dominic Cooper. Yep. And I thought it wasn't a dreadful film, but to me it was like a television episode of Strike Back.
Yeah.
And it's like, I couldn't understand, really, if they were going to put it on this big screen, you need to...
Do something
a bit more special. And I think if you were a fan of the books, or if you were a particular fan of that sort of milieu, then it's fine. But I was watching, that's the wrong word, but never mind. But that was, but if you're really into that, then it was okay. But to me, it was just like it should have been on the television. I couldn't see its place in the cinema.
Like the Sweeney or Special Branch or something along in that sort of vein.
Yeah, I probably would have enjoyed it more had I seen it on the television than going to the cinema to see it. But I liked, normally I like British films, which is why I went to see it, because I think I like to watch and support the British film industry.
Yep.
But yeah, this didn't really do it for me, because I thought it was just, it didn't feel cinematic.
Yep.
I'm just trying to think of... because it's difficult, isn't it? You know the ones that you really, really didn't
like. You really hate.
Films. So films that were supposed to be good, perhaps you could throw a few at us, Cody, and then...
So films that people hyped about this
year. We'll see if we agree.
Get Out.
Get Out, yeah, that was okay.
I like Get Out. I like Get Out.
Blade Runner. I didn't see Get Out, no.
No.
I saw Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yeah, 2049.
Yeah. See, I liked it.
I like that.
I feel like that was a film that was just the right amount of hype.
That worked.
The right amount of hype. It wasn't saying, this is going to be great, this is going to be brilliant. People were going, oh my God, yeah, that was quite good.
It
didn't embarrass itself. I like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
It didn't have... Yeah, because it didn't really have major publicity, did it? Not like huge. Like, I mean, La La Land was all the time. Well, you must see La La Land. You must see this. So that was majorly overhyped.
But it's hard to think when you think back to the beginning of the year, because here you are in December, and it's hard to remember what you saw in sort of January, February, and March.
Was King Arthur this year?
King Arthur was this year.
Legend of the Sword.
That was just Guy Ritchie just being a little bit like a geezer in the Dark Ages.
That was Lockstock in medieval times. Yeah. Really, basically.
Lockstock and two flaming swords.
I know one of my friends
really liked it. Yeah. They just thought, but to me, it was just Guy Ritchie being,
And David Beckham cameo.
Yes.
Well, he's kind of like the one who just cameos in all the films now.
Yeah.
In all of Guy Ritchie's films, because he was in the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Oh, right, was he?
Which
part? Do you know? I didn't pick him out in that because I quite liked the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah. He had a very small role as a video projectionist. But anyway, that's it. That is the show done. Just wanted to say thank you to everybody who's been listening to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let us know what you liked on the Vectis Radio Facebook page this year. Let us know what you enjoyed. And we're still going to be around until the end of the year, watching whatever comes out. But we will see you guys in the new year.
Bye.
Bye-bye.